Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker.
Bonjour!
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 There goes the baker with his tray, like always, the same old bread and rolls to sell.
That's actress Emma Watson in her role as Belle in the new live-action Beauty and the Beast movie, which comes out today. It's the latest version of a story that dates back to 18th century France, but some form of the Beauty and the Beast story is actually even older. Our next guest says stories about animals and human relationships date all the way back to the ancient Greeks. Maria Tatar teaches courses in folklore and mythology at Harvard University, and she put together the new book, Beauty and the Beast, Classic Tales About Animal Brides and Grooms from Around the World. Maria, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for inviting me.
So various cultures, it was interesting, you know, for me to find out that various cultures have told some sort of version of Beauty and the Beast. Can you explain?
I think there's a Beauty and the Beast story in every single culture. There's you can find it anywhere in the world. And part of that is because animals are good to think with. And it is a story about love, courtship, romance, marriage, but also a story about monstrosity. And then it contains all of these deeply problematic cultural contradictions. Cruelty versus compassion, hospitality versus hostility. So it's really a story that gets us talking, and I think that accounts for the reason that we have a kind of cultural repetition compulsion about the tale.
Well, you know, many of us probably know this particular version of Beauty and the Beast. It's wildly popular. It's been wildly popular, hence the movie coming out today. But what about the evolution of these stories over time? I mean, did they start differently? You know, what were some of the others?
We always want to try to find the original. Where did this story spring up? And the astonishing thing is that we can find it everywhere. And so you discover that the Greeks have the story of Zeus in Europa, this startling, frightening tale about a deity disguised as a bull who abducts a young woman, as she's called, and takes her off to the sea. He's a bull. And then we have the story of Cupid and Psyche, a tale about a man who is thought to be a monster, but who turns out to be this very handsome Cupid, figure of Cupid. But this is a story about the union of soulmates. But we could also go to India, we can go to the Middle East, to China, to Japan, and ancient cultures all seem to have had some version of this story.
And it seems as if they may have served different purposes depending on the culture, right? I read in your book, you know, for example, in some cultures, the story may have been almost one to prepare young women for arranged marriages, right? Which is very different.
Absolutely. And the French story, Madame de Beaumont's Beauty and the Beast from the mid-18th century, that's the version that inspired Disney, Disney's animated version, and then this live-action one as well. It's a story that I think taught good manners. Beauty is kind, sincere, sweet, attractive, everything. It's got all the virtues that a girl could want, but that are also impossible to replicate in their entirety. And so this was a story told to pass on a model of good behavior, but then also, as you say, to prepare girls for an arranged marriage with a creature who seems to be a monster or a beast and may end up being something quite different.
Why do you think, though, that this is so compelling? Like, this one has taken off so much.
This Madame de Beaumont's version?
Yes.
I think in part because how does beauty redeem beast? It's through the transformative power of love. And that is such a powerful message. We all know how much love can change you. But it's also about empathy. And how does beauty respond to the other? At first, she's afraid. She's timid. She's a little bit cowardly, but then she becomes courageous. And she develops a strong sense of empathy, which is not necessarily you know, what leads to a romantic union. But I think we've enshrined empathy as a cardinal virtue. Mm-hmm. And when we tell the story to children, that's what we emphasize.
Well, I want to play some cuts from the 1991 film where Belle, and it's voiced here by Paige O'Hara, finds her father locked in the Beast dungeon after he trespassed on the Beast property. And she asks the Beast, Belle does here, what she can do to free her father. Let's listen.
There's nothing you can do. He's my prisoner.
Wait! Take me instead.
You! You would take his place?
Belle, no! You don't know what you're doing!
If I did, would you let him go?
Yes. But you must promise to stay here forever.
So that's Beauty and the Beast. And those values there that Belle is exhibiting, the sacrificing herself for her father and letting staying in the, you know, in the dungeon, the Beast dungeon. I mean, is that also something that you think this tale is supposed to tell folks?
Well,
and is it exemplary?
Yeah. Certainly, Madame de Beaumont was trying to pass on that message about self-sacrifice and subservience. Who are the... You know, Beauty is oriented first toward her father and then toward redeeming the Beast. So she has to save both men.
That's a big job.
She has a lot of responsibility. And I think, you know, in many ways, you've explained exactly why we keep having to make this story new, why we should transform it, add our own values to it, and not necessarily stay with the script. I love the animated version that Disney created, but I'd also love to see a live-action version where they mix things up, where they create a completely new story, one that will speak to not just the audience for the animated version, but a slightly older audience.
Mm. And of course, what?
Well, you can think of Angela Carter's wonderful rewrite of Beauty and the Beast, where... What happens to Tiger's Bride? I should do a spoiler alert. But this is a story in which the young woman turns herself into an animal. And the two live happily ever after. And somehow the human and the animal have been united in that story. It's a very powerful, I've sort of reduced it. But it's a beautiful story, and it shows how we can start to think in new ways about our relationship to nature. We are, after all, now at the top of the food chain. And we are the monsters and the predators in many ways.
I want to also, though, bring up something about Beauty and the Beast, at least this version of it, and that was shown in the 1991 Disney version of the film, that raises some questions for me in my mind. So Belle gets to the castle, right? And the Beast, and we have a clip here, the Beast, who's voiced by Robbie Benson, is trying to persuade Belle to have dinner with him, and she has shut herself in her room. Let's listen.
You can't stay in there forever.
Yes, I can.
Fine. Then go ahead and starve! If she doesn't eat with me, then she doesn't eat at all.
So this is a rather violent, aggressive scene on the part of the Beast. And, you know, well, she's not going to eat. It's going to be my way. And he gets very physical and violent, not with her, but with, objects in the castle. So what kind of message are we sending there? Do women overlook those things?
I think it's a little worrisome, because you can read the beginning of the film as an allegory of domestic abuse.
Right.
And a story that also perpetuates the fantasy that you can tame the Beast, that the ferocious, charismatic creature cohabiting with you will somehow change and transform himself through your actions. So What I think is important to remember is we watch these movies and we don't necessarily have to accept everything that's going on. In fact, I like those provocative, startling moments because we start to talk back to the film and say, no, this isn't right. We wouldn't want a film in which we just simply accept everything that happens and go home with the happily ever after message. I like the idea of being unsettled. And I like the idea of disturbing moments that get us not just to wonder as we're looking, you know, to feel this sense of wonder, but to wonder why, wonder about what is going on in the movie.
Mm. Have you seen the movie yet?
Tomorrow, I'm all set. Now it opens tonight.
Right,
so.
Right. Now, it is supposed to be somewhat different than the Disney version, but thematically, I think the same. They're supposed to be. Yeah, I've read about some different parts of the movie that may have modernized it somewhat. Mm-hmm. However, do you think that this story might be out of date for where we are currently? This version of the story.
I remember that when the animated version of Beauty and the Beast first came out, everyone was thrilled by the fact that Belle was a reader, mm-hmm. That she had a library of books. And Disney had actually taken that from Madame de Beaumont's story, where Belle is where she loves to read. That seemed to me a good start, but it was just such a tiny moment. That is, Belle is also presented as adventurous. She wants to leave the provinces and all right. of that, and she does, and then she settles down with Beast. So I love the fact that in a film like Frozen, Disney was really adventurous and started with Hans Christian Andersen's The Snow Queen and said, no, this isn't good enough. This isn't for us today. So we're going to use the tropes of the story and be inspired by it, but make something that is for us, for a new generation.
Now, your new book has several stories, as we said in the beginning, about animal-human relationships and looking back at them. Do you have a particular favorite?
I think I love The Grateful Crane more than any of the other stories in there. And I guess I do worry because you've got a self-sacrificing heroine who is making something beautiful for her husband. But she's also betrayed by her husband, who is too curious about her. And she goes back to nature. She returns to her origins. But I also love the story of Changuita, an animal bride, a monkey, who is redeemed when her husband hurls her against the wall, and she turns into this beautiful creature. And again, you know, shocking, it's startling us and saying, what was that all about?
Right.
So that we're not just left with the story, but we want to go out and talk about it and share it with someone.
But they're dramatic, they're aggressive, so. Well, good luck when you see the movie tomorrow. We'll go out now on the song Beauty and the Beast. This is sung by Emma Thompson as Mrs. Potts in the new version of Beauty and the Beast.
Just a little change.
We've been talking with Maria Tatar. She teaches courses in folklore and mythology at Harvard University. She's editor of the new book, Beauty and the Beast, Classic Tales About Animal Brides and Grooms from Around the World. Maria, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to talk. Thanks for inviting me.
That's it for today and this week. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.